Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Moss Powers of Bruis Tabletop Games about Book of Leviathan, their expansion for the religious horror TTRPG, Hell Wailers. Moss, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hey, how's it going?
It's going good.
Going great. Doing? Really excited to have you here. Excited to talk about this game.
Yeah.
So, Moss, you know, we wanted to have you on to talk about this new expansion for Hell Wailers. We've discussed some games on the show with, like, religious themes and sort of depictions of hell and the devil, but it feels like with this game you're sort of tackling religious trauma head on, and there's a quote from the game that says, on a more metaphorical level, this is a game about religious trauma and finding the means to save yourself. So I think, like, to start and kind of set the table for this conversation, what does Hell Wailers have to say about religious trauma, and if you're comfortable, kind of your own experience with religion?
Sure. I mean, that's jumping right in, isn't it?
Yeah.
We don't mess around here.
Straight to the thesis. Hell Wailers, at the end of the day, as I kind of said, is about finding a means to save yourself. I was raised religious, as you could probably guess by the game. I have a lot of complex relationship at this point in time in my life with religion, but I would summarize it as I was previously moderately religious growing up and then kind of moved away from the church as I grew older, discovered that I was a queer person, and those kind of beliefs didn't really reconcile particularly well for my experiences. So I had to kind of find another space in my brain or my personal, like, code or my ethos or whatever it may be. I had to find this space and kind of replace it by finding a different way to move forward without those things. And I kind of, in the last couple of years, have taken to processing a lot of that through Hell Wailers and writing a lot of that. That stuff has been really cathartic in a way. So,
and then with this new expansion, Book of Leviathan, how does that book kind of expand on the themes from the first?
Thematically, it's a lot of things that I wanted to circle around to, but hadn't necessarily gotten to. It goes a little more, I won't say dark, but it touches more on some of the more abstract lore of Christianity, and particularly the Bible. There's some Older Testament things in there that are a little wackier and a little stranger, but you might recognize them if you're someone that did grow up reading the Bible as I did. But we kind of touched on some old throwbacks. So a lot of that is circling around to things I didn't get to say the first time around. But in general, it's a lot of the same, but it's also more in a way, right?
I'm always interested to see anyone dealing with their thoughts on religion, I mean, through any kind of art, and especially through tabletop, which is an especially interesting thing to deal with, that kind of, like, religious trauma or just thoughts on religion, because unlike a book or, like, a piece of art, you don't have full control over it. Like, you don't get to fully express your idea. You're expressing, like, half of it and then allowing players to fill in the other half. I know, you know, I was kind of similar to you, raised relatively religious, and then as I got older, just fell less and less religious as I went on. And it's not a thing I've really fully explored in my, like, oh, I've not delved into myself and been like, how do I really feel about religion? I've got some thoughts, but I haven't really dove in a way that writing a whole role-playing game requires you to. So a game like this really interests me, because this is a way for me to kind of, like, confront some of my own thoughts through play, which I hadn't really ever thought was a thing I would be interested in doing. But now, like, as we've been reading through the games, I'm like, that actually sounds interesting. I'd love to see where my mind goes in a state of play that I might not have actually found just kind of thinking through things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the general idea of a game being in conversation between the author and the players, like, atemporally, is really fascinating. And the idea of, I can only put so much out there without, you know, I can't hold the player's hands through the game as they're playing it at the table. At the end of the day, I can only put out what frameworks that I can provide, and then the story is theirs at that point. But it seems like the Hellwailers stuff, a lot of people have resonated pretty well with it. It seems like it's a, while it's not an entirely universal experience, it's a pretty broad enough one that a lot of people are finding some resonance and some commonality with it.
Yeah, it's interesting you say, like, yeah, obviously you can't hold the player's hand and tell them exactly what to do. But I think one of the things you do in the base Hellwailers book, which we've been seeing in more games, we feel like lately, is providing some player principles. And I think that one of the things I really liked in reading Hellwailers was that the player principles feel really specific to the game rather than like specific to role-playing games broadly. Sometimes you see more like broad role-playing principles, but these are like really anchored in the world of Hellwailers. those player principles are boldness in the face of danger, loyalty to ship and captain, drive to save your soul, and cooperation with your fellow whalers. Can you talk about why you felt it was important to kind of put in these sort of principles and what they help players get to at the table?
So initially, I kind of lifted the idea of the cats and the player principles and things like that from Necronautilus as I was reading through that. It felt like a very curated experience in that sense, but having a very specific play principle in mind. I think I was writing this during the height of some discourse about something or other online related to what player principles or like what is a role-playing game conversations were at the time. And a lot of that stuff ended up coloring that kind of way that I contextualized that as a very specific in a very specific way, I guess. But I wanted to drive in the fact that this game is, while it's not totally unique in the sense that it's, you know, it's still a role-playing game, there's some commonality with some other systems and stuff. I wanted to really drive in that this experience is designed to be what it is and not something else, right?
We've been seeing these player principles in a lot more games recently. I think most recently we saw it in Land of Eem when we talked to Ben and James from Land of Eem. And I really love these as like a design principle, but also just really appreciate them as a player, because especially with games that aren't generic fantasy game, like this has a very specific thing it's trying to do. The player principles are just there and they guide you so well of how you should be entering the game, what you should be thinking about, what is important to this game. And like, if you engage with these four things, boldness in the face of danger, loyalty to ship and captain, drive to save your soul, cooperation with your fellow whalers, like, by doing those four things, you will have fully engaged with the game. Like, the game will work better by virtue of you doing these things. And I think so many games have, like, GM tips. They've got, like, here's how to run a combat. Here's what to do, whatever. And so few games have this player-forward section that is saying, hey, here's how to approach this game. Because it's not generic fantasy, like, insert generic fantasy game here. It wants to do this experience that you may not have had before. Here's the way into that. Use these four tips. I just really want to call out how good I think that is and how important I think that is, especially for a game like this that is such a specific idea that it's trying to do.
Yeah, I feel like I've played a lot of games where I wasn't sure what level to really meet them on. Like, I have a general idea of the setting and the tropes or whatever that they're built upon, but coming into a game and not knowing on what axis to engage with it can sometimes be a little confusing, and I wanted to kind of shore that up a little bit.
I think potentially for a listener who doesn't know the baseline pitch of Hellwailers, I'd love to just get kind of, because it's a great pitch, and I'd love to just get like kind of in your own words what the premise of this game that people are engaging with.
So Hellwailers is a game of damned whalers set upon the seas of hell, sinners that have lost their lives and are now in literal hell, sailing upon the oceans. They've been offered a deal by a captain to slay a monstrous leviathan whale called the Hell Whale. And should they do so and taste its flesh, they will be granted salvation and redemption and their ticket out of hell.
Love that. Yeah. Rad. Like, I mean, like, yeah, you hear that and you're just like, yeah, I want to be a doomed Hell Whaler. And then, like, you do something in this game mechanically that, like, we're always excited to see, which is you bring in some board game style play to an RPG. And that's through the use of a Sikbo board, which is something I had never seen in an RPG. Could you talk about a little bit what this Sikbo board is and how it's core to how you play the game?
So Sikbo is roughly a 3d6 roulette table. You kind of have various odds that pay out based on a 3d6 roll. You'll bet things on a board, and they have various ratios of win to not win, and that kind of determines your payouts for them. So I took what was basically a standard token-based game and was actually inspired by a conversation that was kind of public on Tumblr, I think, at the time, between Jay Dragon and Andy from Pandion Games about what you can do with tokens other than just exchange them as a meta currency. And I think Jay had said something about it'd be interesting if you tracked where tokens were as it mattered. And I think that has kind of evolved into what now is Seven-Part Pact. But I kind of took that conversation in a different direction, and I was thinking about other games that I was familiar with. And I happened to know about Sicbo through actually my LARP community. We love this game in our fake casinos that we play all the time. It's a very popular gambling game in our LARP community. And I kind of saw the potential of taking tokens, caring about where they're placed, and that kind of organically brought in the idea of Hellwailers as a gambling metagame, I guess.
And kind of how does this idea of like using a gambling mechanic reinforce the themes you're going after in this game? Like, it's like you're seeking salvation, but part of the way you're doing that is through gambling.
Oh, yeah. Definitely thematic in the sense that gambling is like a pretty iconic vice. It's typically regarded as pretty sinful. I wanted to also make kind of, I guess, a statement on the idea of not only like luck and privilege as they intersect. Like, you can get lucky and that makes it easier to play the game. But a lot of times, like, a lot of that is just like a hand of fate that is kind of dealt to you. It's not necessarily your own hard work or toil that gets you there, as some people might like to believe. A lot of times it really is just the hand that you are kind of dealt, and sometimes it is a great fortunate measure to be very privileged, and sometimes you're shit out of luck. So that kind of fell into the themes that we were playing with gambling.
I know I was raised Catholic, and I've always thought of Catholics as being the Christians who can gamble and drink. So yes. This really hit me well. Another thing this game does that's very interesting is the GM role is not only a GM, but is also playing the captain, which is a playable character. Like, the captain has moves in a character sheet, which I don't think is the thing I'd ever really... Maybe like the master in Die, but I hadn't seen that a lot before. Why? Kind of, who is the captain in this world, and what is their role in both the fiction and as a gameplay device for this game?
So I kind of allude to it a little bit in some of it, but the captain represents a couple things meta-contextually, and it's also like a mechanical device in the sense that the devil might be the captain, any authority figure might be the captain, any clergy or religious figure above you that kind of stratifies themselves between you and them could be the captain. There's kind of an ambiguity there that I kind of rely on for some of the fiction. But mechanically, and like what role it serves in the game, is that the GM is a player too, and I wanted them to have something to kind of engage in the game with on that level, and kind of provide a... I know there's a lot of flack for the GMPC idea of like what D&D has kind of made it into, but to provide a PC that can give the GM something to point the players in a direction towards if they need to kind of spur them onward, as Captain Ahab would in Moby Dick, which is obviously a very clear influence in this. But like, he could be your Ahab, could be your literal priest, could be your own father, for all you know. Who knows? Any kind of authority figure that kind of represents that space of stratification between the player and the higher powers that be, I guess.
I love what you said about like DMPCs being, especially in D&D, more of a flaw than a feature, whereas or often seen that way, whether or not they are at your table is, you know, up to each player. But I love that in this game it is very much a feature, and like, you are really taking, like, exactly like you said, like, the GM is a player, and we say that on this show a lot, and we say it in terms of all different types of role-playing games, but very few of those role-playing games actually have like here is a character sheet for the GM to also play. It's just kind of this assumed idea of the GM also gets a say in the fiction. This is like, no, the GM has strong, normal, and weak moves that they can do through this character, which is really, it's a really fun way to actually kind of practice what you preach and really like deliver on the idea of the GM is a player as well.
Yeah, it feels like taking some of the GM-less principles of like belonging outside belonging, which I think there's some DNA of that system here, and skewing that towards still having a GM role, but pulling a lot of that belonging outside belonging GM-lessness towards one person.
Yeah, 100% of that, the DNA of belonging outside belonging is very clear in this with the token influence, but I also, like, I come from a background of running Call of Cthulhu all the time when I was in high school and, like, college. That was my game that was not D&D for a long time. So in that sense, I had a lot of, like, GM-structured mystery crafting and stuff like that, and I wanted to kind of pay some homage to my roots in that sense of, like, what do I know, write what I know kind of stuff, you know?
In that sort of, you know, belonging outside belonging framework, you have these playbooks, these different sinners people can be. Who are, like, kind of the Hell Whalers of Hell Whaler? Like, who, like, what is that, what are these, what does a character look like for somebody in this game?
So originally when I was kind of conceptualizing them, they were going to just be the classic Seven Deadly Sins, but I kind of felt that was a little tired, but you can still see some of the influence in some of the playbooks, like the Hot-Tempered or the Greedy, is like kind of in that vein. But a lot of what it kind of ended up being, and a lot of this writing was my most direct involvement in Hell Whalers. I should say I did have a co-writer for a lot of the fiction itself, Bogus Cheesecake, a friend of mine, that did a fantastic job with a lot of that. But a lot of the playbooks was where my direct, like, game design work was. And a lot of that came very personally from my experience of, like, how did I feel as a person who was deeply affected by my belief in the church and my abandonment of the church, ultimately.
And then with this expansion, the Book of Leviathan, what do these two new playable playbooks kind of bring to that, like, possible story of Hell Whalers, the Abomination and the Returned?
So the Returned is kind of the more mechanical end of the playbook design, in the sense that it's an advanced playbook that kind of embodies the trope of came back wrong. And it kind of plays on themes of, like, trust and imposter syndrome, and uses a lot of, like, is this person really who they say they are? Are they really, like, returned in the truest sense, or are they something else or someone deceiving you? But it plays a lot on trust and imposter syndrome at the end of the day, because the playbook itself doesn't necessarily know their own origins unless they choose to decide so. So it's like, do you really know who you are? And then the Abomination is probably the weirder end of it, but it's more personal in the sense that that is my direct commentary on how I feel as a queer person, because it is ultimately about queerness, and my distance from the church kind of following that. But it's kind of a more direct commentary on some of that stuff and how I felt about my queer experience and how that kind of led to me divorcing myself from the church. And a lot of those moves that kind of show up in that space are, like, things I've seen or experienced and, like, felt as a person, kind of reconciling my queer experience with coming from a position of being told that, you know, that kind of lifestyle will send me to hell for all eternity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the church really doing great work out there.
Really, really killing it.
I love that all the playbooks have, like, such a clear relationship with religion that you can choose to play. Like, it's like, yes, you get these, like, cool, you know, different moves to play around with narratively, but it's like at the core, like, these are eight different relationships with religion and with, like, why you are a sinner. That's really great.
Cyber Plus Punk Overload is the first official expansion for the award-winning, ultra-stylish, rules-light cyberpunk game, Cyber Plus Punk, that is specifically designed for action-packed one-shot sessions. In Cyber Plus Punk, you are a runner, a merc,
a criminal, an activist living on the edge and running in the shadows of a gritty, ultra-violent world. Infiltrate a mega prison, escape a bloody reality show, solve a time loop, race vehicles in the Badlands, or escape the Netscape. One-shot scenarios, gear catalogs, plug-in rule sets, and complete settings made by an all-star cast of game designers and stylishly bundled into three sleek thematic packs. So go back Cyber Plus Punk Overload on Kickstarter to get the limited edition version with a slick hollow foil sleeve. Just search CBR plus PNK colon Overload on Kickstarter. That's CBR plus PNK colon Overload.
The Badlands. Legend has it that beneath the dust, something old and powerful still whispers to any gunslinger foolish enough to listen. One day, aboard a doomed train into the wastes, three unlucky travelers hear that call. A runaway socialite, a shape-shifting bounty hunter, and a retired thief turned family man. Will our outcasts find what they're looking for?
I mean, we're already here. Let's have a little fun.
You really went in there, guns blazing.
I thought that was the plan.
My potions are miraculous.
I thought we were being quiet.
Oh, Stump only has one volume. Sorry.
Wild roses grow out of his mouth, having filled his lungs.
What's happening out there?
Violence.
Find out on Mage Hand High Five.
I think the thing I want to talk about now is for a game like Hellwhalers, where you are chasing a hell whale, it's pretty obvious that the game is going to end with you trying to catch or kill a big ass hell whale. And I feel like in a lot of games like this, where there is one like big climactic scene at the end, that's the scene you kind of have to nail as a GM. Like the whole game is built towards it. And that's like the focal point of the game. It's the thing you're trying to do. You're trying to catch or kill the whale. How does this game help you to get there and really nail that scene in a way that's going to be satisfying and emotionally resonant for all the players?
I think a lot of it came down to just like deciding on, for one, a set of mechanics, and for two, a lot of like build up, because really you got to get in the mindset of hyping it as you go to it, and then you got to deliver on that hype, but you got to have the buy-in, you got to have all that like that's the conceit of the whole game, is that you're after that thing. So if you're not hyped when you get there, there's something wrong, right? But generally speaking, delivering on that came to the idea of, like, how do I craft a memorable boss battle that doesn't feel just like a HP slog or like throw tokens at it until it's dead kind of thing? And a lot of that came back to the idea that I originally had kind of talked about with the gambling of, like, there is a luck element, but it's kind of stacked in a certain way that it's not going to all front load into one bad roll and you're dead. But ultimately the mechanic is you're trying to beat the whale before the whale rolls six three times to end the game, essentially. So there's a building tension as sixes appear. The first six you get a little more intense, the second six you get a significant more intense, and then the third six will literally destroy your crew and your ship.
That's rad. I really like that take on what is essentially a track, but like having it be a thing that is randomized and is rolled is really exciting, because that's always, like you said, the tension is going to mount because you can see it, you know where it's at, and you know that the last tick on the box is all down to a roll of a die. Like, you know, going back into the gambling mechanics and going back into even like the player setup in the first couple of pages, like if you've gotten to this point, you're bought in. And that starts on page, you know, three of this book that says that's the player principles. And then the core mechanic of the gambling, like, all brings into this, like, one climactic battle that I am very excited to play someday, because it's going to be very fun and epic.
And it kind of inverts the gambling that you've been doing all throughout play of, like, you know, using this Sicbo board. And then it's like, now the GM kind of gets to do it's not quite a push your luck, but it's like it's got push your luck feel to it of like a keep going until I can get you.
Gambling,
or I guess
to feel
the players
bad.
Are pushing their luck with, because they roll every time, every time the player takes an action in this final?
It'd be after every player gets one round. So
gets one round.
You just pass a scene, pass the scenes around the table, and then the whale goes, and then pass the scenes around, and then the whale goes.
What is kind of like, because you share like from playing the game, playtesting the game, like a moment in this battle that feels like so Hell Whalers from like anything you like from your experience running or playing the game. Yeah.
I'd say when you get to that second table and like every single die roll is like that could literally crash your ship to pieces in a 1 in 6 shot. But when you get 2, 3, 4, 5 rolls before it hits and you manage to take down that whale, there's something really satisfying in there. And some games it's going to come down. I've seen a couple playtests where it came down to like a 6 on the first roll, a 5, and then a 6 on the second table. And then a couple rolls, and then the last 6, and then you're dead. But that's still 4 or 5 rolls before it, like, and you get 12 or so actions in between all those rolls. So it ends up pretty climactic, regardless of how quick it goes. But I've definitely seen some quicker ones.
Right.
It is, at the end of the day, it's a luck mechanic, so.
It feels very like, we just played Last Train to Bremen on my first dungeon, and it feels very much like that, like final encounter in Bremen, where it's like, yeah, the odds are weighted against you because you're fighting the devil, and it's like the odds are weighted against you here because you're fighting a literal fucking hell whale, and like it's gonna feel challenging, and if you succeed, it's gonna feel really fucking good. Well, I say that, but the epilogues in this game are pretty fucking brutal, like on the whole. So could you talk to us a little bit about like these epilogues and what happens after, let's say you defeat the Hell Whale, like what happens to your sailors after? There's kind of a, maybe spoiler alert for folks who want to experience this in game, but it seems like these epilogues feel like they're really the nail of your point with this game.
Yeah. So a lot of these epilogues were kind of co-written by Tom, Bogus Cheesecake, and we really wanted to drive in the theme that there was really no happy endings here. True salvation doesn't come from killing a whale, obviously. It's like the idea is you got there through your own merits as like clawing your way through hell and finding a way to really manage to save yourself at the end of the day. And like a lot of that is just the nature of the journey more than the destination, I guess. Because really, when you get to those endings and you get kind of a bleak cutscene, more or less, in a lot of them, you kind of realize, like, oh yeah, I was playing probably a pretty bad person, or maybe a good person, or like, what does the nature of a good versus bad person really mean, right? There's some commentary on that as well, as like, who really deserves hell, and the idea that yeah, you might be flawed in some way, or you might have these vices or these sins that your character is kind of mired in, but what does that really mean about their worth? And what does that mean about, you know, do they really deserve eternal suffering and torment for that? Did they to begin with? And then, of course, the idea that they can claw their way out of that and find true salvation is kind of also a commentary, I suppose, on the idea that that's not really something we'll find necessarily either, especially through brutality and violence, as the game kind of enforces.
It's interesting that when I read through these epilogues, I immediately thought about 10 Candles, which is, you know, tragic horror game. And in that game, like, it's very explicit throughout that no one survives 10 Candles. Like, the point of 10 Candles is you get to the end and everyone is going to die. It is tragedy. There is no surviving that game. And in that game, it's very explicit about it. It's on like the back cover. It's on like page one. Whereas in this game, there you can succeed in killing the whale. It's difficult, but you can. But the epilogues are kind of like, you're kind of screwed no matter what. Like this is a bad ending. There's no escape of this. There's only flavors of what future could look like. I'm curious how important it was to you, or why you chose to not highlight that aspect in like the character creation or in the introduction of the game, and instead leave it as a thing that is going to be discovered by the players rather than they know going in.
I think the real reason for that is that I'm kind of a sucker for drama, and I love the idea of hiding it from the players a little bit.
Hey, that's fine.
Yeah. you know, I feel it's a little more theatrical when you have a little reveal at the end. And the endings are kind of cinematic in a weird way that not a lot of TTRPGs do. They're kind of scripted cutscenes in a strange way. But they were kind of designed to play out, like, depending on the player's journey along the way, the GM will kind of choose one that seems appropriate to the players and kind of pick one that resonates with the journey in a sense that feels like it can be a strong thesis to whatever journey had led them there, I suppose. And there's a few different varieties of the endings that kind of touch on various themes. But at the end of the day, like, it's partially a horror game, and we kind of wanted some horror aspects to the final endings, of course.
I think the thing that makes the epilogues work in this game is the work you've done up until now to, like, get the players in the headspace, even if not telling them explicitly, that that ending is coming. Like, starting with the player principles on, like, page 3 or 4, you know you're doing these things. And by the time you get to this point, I think it should be pretty obvious to you that, like, the hell that you are going through is not just going to, you're not going to have a beautiful, happy ending in, you know, a classical Christian heaven. There's no pearly gates for you. And even if there are, those pearly gates contain something sadder and more nihilistic.
Anyone offering you a deal in this game does not have your best interests at heart, including the game in a fun way, in kind of a fun kind of antagonistic way.
Yeah, I feel like that was one of the things that I felt like I could get away with, not spoiling the idea that there's bad endings like that, because it seems like there should be a catch and everyone should kind of be on board and know that.
Yeah. I love a twist. I really do. I think it's I'm curious, like, what, like, how do people react? How do these hit at the table?
I've had kind of a broad spectrum of endings. The one that gets used the most is the one that's Heaven's Empty, essentially. Spoilers, sorry. But the idea is that there's this great nothingness kind of awaiting your characters at the end of it. And after the kind of, like, bleakness of all the things that led them there, when they finally get to that ending and there's kind of a punctuated pause for this kind of reveal, most players are like, wait, but where's my reward? But they kind of know the whole time that there's not really going to be a reward, but that kind of leaves them sitting in their characters for a moment. And usually we do a little highlighting, like, post epilogue kind of thing a lot of the times at the table, where we'll kind of, like, highlight what their characters are thinking as they're now kind of more or less marooned in their own purgatory of sorts, and that doesn't really lead anywhere, I guess.
Their own personal hell, parentheses, heaven, question mark?
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, there's two pieces of media this is weirdly reminding me of, like, that are very different in tone, but I think are saying similar things. One is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and this, like, idea of,
wow,
like, we're seeking the answer to the life, the universe, and everything, and the robot spits out 42, and it's like, well, you don't have the question. And it's that idea of, like, yes, yeah, seeking these grand answers is a bit of a fool's errand. And then the other one that it reminds me of is The Good Place, and spoilers for The Good Place, in case anybody hasn't watched it. But,
oh, massive. If you haven't watched The Good Place and have any idea that you might want to,
yeah, Moss,
you
want
skip
me
ahead
to not
for
spoil
about
it.
Minutes.
Have you watched The Good Place?
I've seen it a couple seasons, but I'm not a TV person. You're fine.
Okay.
Okay, good.
For the next minute, I'm telling you, listener, right now, I'm going
how
to spoil the massive twist of how The Good Place ends. You can skip a minute ahead now. The Good Place, the ultimate reveal is that, like, the actual Good Place is empty because the people who are in charge of The Good Place have just, like, been running this insane calculation, and, like, nobody is savable. But then ultimately it twists around and it's like everybody is savable, but not in the way that we thought. And I think that these two kinds of, I'm reminded that these two kinds of things are, I like this idea of, like, seeking great answers, seeking great salvation from, like, an outside source isn't the thing. It's like, it's a personal journey. And that's what you were saying before, that, like, this game is ultimately about the journey.
Yeah. And I think I even mentioned it in the, either the post or the foreword or somewhere in there, that it really is about the journey and not the destination in this kind of game. And when you do finally get your cosmic reward, and it is kind of a fart in the face, you know that it's going to be kind of a small dose of cosmic absurdity, but also like a small dose of nihilism and a small dose of like kind of retrospective pause, I suppose, and kind of gives players some breathing room to reflect on what exactly they've been doing the whole time when they're bloodthirstily harpooning a whale.
It is interesting that in the afterwards of this game, you also mentioned that it's this game, one of the core themes of this game is hope. And there's a great line in here that I just want to read you to you. Hope is one of the main themes of the game, not ephemeral, gossamer hope, but the gritty, salty, blood-spattered hope that really embodies the struggle through life that we sometimes face. I'm curious just to hear a little bit more from you on that topic of like, what does this game have to say about hope? And how do you think that hope in this game being such a core element is related to your thoughts on religion and religious trauma?
So hope in general is kind of rife with a lot of definitions, especially from a religious perspective. And people like to think of, like I said, as hope as this like fragile, delicate thing. But in general, like when I think of hope, I think of tenacity and I think of the idea of like holding out for something no matter how bad it's going to get. Like, I'm sure we've all had pretty dark, harrowing moments through our lives, as many people do, because life is quite a struggle sometimes. And holding on that there's going to be a better day around the corner somewhere, it's not going to always be this awful, is one of those kind of core tenets that I hold on to. And in Hellwailers, like, yeah, you're literally going through hell, but you kind of got to like hold out that there's something, there's got to be something at the end of this. And even if it is, you know, a nihilistic, mediocre bleh, it's a better day around the corner, and it doesn't have to be perfect to be something, right?
I love that. We're not holding out for endless good days. We're just holding out for a better day than today.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Moss, before we start to wrap up this conversation, I want to talk a bit more about this expansion you've got crowdfunding, which is Book of Leviathan, and specifically like, where are you crowdfunding? When are you crowdfunding until? And like, what can people kind of get from this campaign?
So a lot of the campaign stuff has been going really well so far. We're currently running it on BackerKit at ttrpg.link/BOL if you want to short link it. Otherwise, you can find it on BackerKit under Hellwailer's Book of Leviathan. And the campaign's been going really well. I think we're sitting like $8,300 out of our $1,500 goal. So we've hit a couple stretches here. We've got quite a few tiers to offer. We're doing a literal, like a build your own harpoon kit that someone has already backed for at $666 that I'm excited about.
I don't think I saw that. That's so great.
I didn't see
that.
That's sick.
The 666 tier comes with metal harpoon heads that you'll be able to attach to like a wooden stick, like a broomstick essentially, to make a harpoon with.
That's wild.
And also a chest and a bunch of other stuff and like a flag and all that, a couple book copies. But we already had a backer for that I'm really excited about. But we also have a bunch of other stuff. We have patches, we have book copies, we have the original and the expansion, both available, PDF and physicals. And we have some patches, some like, I don't remember what all we have, honestly. But we got a lot of good stuff, and I'm super excited about it. It's been going really well. We're picking up some decent traction on it, and it's overfunded. Hit a few stretches now, and we've got some digital content that I'm really excited about that came bundled with the game that we're going to be releasing as the PDF content. One of which is tactical minis rules for the whale.
Oh, wow. That's fun.
So if you want to play the whale encounter as a tactical miniatures game that is nautical combat, naval combat against a whale, essentially, we're doing that with papercraft boats and papercraft whales, which...
Cool.
So you make a little origami whale, you make a little origami boat, and you sail them around and they fight each other, and you got your characters running around the ship. But there's a whole rules supplement that I wrote for that. That's a digital freebie that comes with any backing of the Book of Leviathan. And we got our stretch goals set so that the papercraft boat and whale will have accompanying printable texturing that is lino cut by Matt Willetto. Matageddon. So it'll be lino cut stamped. You just print it out and then you can fold it into your boat or your whale, and they're textured and have little like appearances based on the lino cut.
That's very cool.
Super really excited sick. About that. We have a shanty that we're recording more verses of. We recorded one verse of a shanty long ago for the original Hellwailers, and we're releasing it with more verses now. And we got a couple other like little digital things we're throwing in. I wrote an essay that's accompanying it and a couple other things. So yeah, we got some fun stuff with the Book of Leviathan. Obviously the book itself is pretty cool. It says A5. I always forget the small one. It's the half size of a letter, and it's 40 pages per Book of Leviathan. So it's pretty thick, reasonably speaking. So I'm excited about it. The art looks gorgeous. It's all come together really well. I'm super stoked on it.
And if you need yet another reason to back, if you guys hit one of your final stretch goals at 18,000, so you got to double what you've made right now, we're going to do an actual play of Hellwailers over on My First Dungeon. So if you want to hear us play it, keep backing this project, because we want to check it out and put it on mic and do some crazy naval combat sound design. And
oh, Hell Ocean sound design? Ooh!
We did a whole bunch of shanties for Wild Sea. It feels like we'd have to make at least one shanty for Hellwailers. Which yeah. feels right.
Yeah, and you're working with Tony from N Plus One again. I know Tony helped bring the original game to life. Like, how has that been? How has like Plus One kind of helped bring this game to life and now bring the expansion to life?
Honestly, huge shout out to Tony and the whole crew for helping out with it. It's been a great process, but originally Hellwailers was picked up with Plus One EXP, and when I mentioned that we had an expansion in the works, Tony was really excited and wanted to help us bring it to life. He's been monumental in helping, and so is the rest of the crew that we've been working with for it. It's been a fantastic endeavor working with them again.
Oh, I know one thing mechanically I didn't get a chance to ask about. There's a fishing mini game in Hellwailers, which I just was like really delighted by. And also the fish are so weird and cool, and you've got a bunch of new fish in the Book of Leviathan. Can you just briefly talk about this fishing mini game and like why you wanted to include it in the game?
Oh, of course. If I have a game that's set on the ocean, you can be damn sure there's going to be a fishing mini game, of course. How could you release a game without one? But honestly, I love the idea of onboarding players to the whale encounter by teaching them how to fight it in the same way with the fish. That's what it is. It's just a single table that does the same thing that the hell whale does in that sense. Instead of three rolls, it's the six just has the fish escape, which obviously is not good if you're trying to catch your dinner. And then other than that, it's basically teaches players how to use the knot encounters and the rolling encounters that the fish use to fight the whale. It's a teaching mechanic.
I really love having the mini game that just teaches you the final battle in the game. Also, I know in our outline for this game, it just says fishing mini game. We're just like excited to talk about it.
And Book of Leviathan has some fun new fish. We got to experiment with the prestige fishing, which was Tom's idea. The idea that once you fished up a previous fish, you can replace it with one of the new ones. Mm. So instead of fishing the same thing twice on the roll, you get a fun new encounter with an advanced fish if you roll the same fishing number.
What's your favorite new fish from the new book? Just to give people a little preview of the flavor here.
Last night on our stream, we encountered it, but it was the skeletal plesiosaur.
yeah.
A skeleton of
I'm sorry, you simply must say more.
Yeah, the skeleton of an ancient marine reptile, and you have to fight it for four rounds before it disanimates. And it has the possibility of eating a whaler and trapping them in its ribs and then escaping overboard and then they'll drown. So that's a thing.
That's fucking rad.
That's really good. So, dear listener, if for no other reason than the skeletal plesiosaur, go back Book of Leviathan right now. That is awesome. I love that. Moss, I think we're going to go into our final question, unless there's anything you feel like we missed that you wanted to hit about the game.
In part of the writing, I wanted to do a little, I guess, shout out to one of my favorite horror creators in general, Junji Ito. But there is a direct reference to Slug Girl 2 in Book of Leviathan that I'm really happy with. And the art that accompanied it, phenomenal work from our artist Lepish. Absolutely disgusting positive.
The whole aesthetic of this game is so good. Like, I love the cover and the spot art and stuff, the use of public domain and original like Lino cut style stuff. Yeah, I don't know if you want to just like shout out the art team in general of these books, because they rock.
Absolutely. Original Hellwailers cover by Albert Johnson, one of my good friends. He did a fantastic, iconic look for the whale. Very bold and striking with that first cover. A lot of the internal stamps were done by my friend Charles, who also ended up doing the Shanty, musician friend that does some lino cut work. Did some interior, like physical stamps for the first book. Lepish did our digital stamps. One of my friends from LARP, they're fantastic and do really good job of like capturing the lino cut feel, but in digital art. A lot of that striking kind of look of like the high contrast black and negative space. And then we have some art from the new cover is by my friend Holly Freiberg at Holy Frogbert on Instagram. If you want to follow her, Holly did a fantastic job with the lino cut. She kind of surprised me. I wasn't too sure of what it would look like when it was done, but it was actually based on a concept piece by one of my other friends that drew some fan art for Hellwailers. And then we kind of turned that into a lino cut piece with Holly's work, and it came out fantastic. And we brought back Albert for one other internal stamp on Book of Leviathan as well. So excellent art team. Shout out to Public Domain too.
Hey, Public Domain is fucking great.
100%.
Don't I know it.
Moss, thank you so much for coming to the table. We always have one last question we like to ask of every guest before we let them go, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation of anything for our audience. This could be inside of tabletop, outside of tabletop. It could be a book or a movie. It could be a font or just, hey, go take a walk outside because the weather's nice. And Moss, what do you bring to the table?
I'd say, kind of looping back to earlier, hope. There's always going to be something around the corner. Keep that hope alive. Even if things look like shit right now, it'll be, there's something around the corner. Even if it's not a perfect heaven, maybe it's a little better than now, but it is coming. Just hold out.
Wow.
Hell yeah. Agreed.
We'll link to hope in the show notes below.
Yeah, we'll link our affiliate link where you can buy hope. Sorry to undercut that really beautiful message with a dumb.
No, it was a really beautiful really message. Nice. And I apparently I battle sincerity with jokes. Well, Moss, thank you so much for coming. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you? And also remind us one more time where they can find Hellwailers if they want to back the project.
I am Moss Powers. You can find me on most places of the internet at Moss Dagger, MossDagger. I'm on Blue Sky, Tumblr, Discord. You can probably find my email if you look hard enough. Yeah, and then you can find the Book of Leviathan at ttrpg.link/BOL, Book of Leviathan, or you can search around on Crowdfunder, or on BackerKit rather, and find that link if you want to do it the hard way. Book of Leviathan's crowdfunding through July 10th. You can also find the original Hellwailers through +1 EXP, and pretty soon Book of Leviathan will also be available at +1 EXP. TTRPG link or ttrpg.link/hellyeah for Hellwailers. shout out to Short Links.
Excellent. And if you want more gamey content from us here at Talk of the Table, you should consider becoming a member of the Many Sided Media Patreon. There you'll get access to bonus roundtables we do with guests for Talk of the Table. We also do bonus actual plays for My First Dungeon, cast talkbacks for My First Dungeon, and a whole lot more. There's a ton of stuff there. You're really getting your money's worth. We're really trying to make it your money's worth each and every month. Also, if you want to keep up with what we are working on, you can become a subscriber to the Many Sided newsletter. Those will all be linked in our show notes below. As always, please rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.